Back to the failing to plan, planning to fail, that kind of thing.
Yep.
Who was that? Ben Franklin? We'll call it that.
Yeah, we'll say that.
Yeah. The same guy that said beer is proof that God loves you.
You're listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, where HIPAA and humor collide to make learning fun. Your delightful hosts are Donna Grindle and David Sims. Relax. HIPAA help is on the way.
Welcome to episode 374 of the Help Me with HIPAA podcast. My name is David Sims of HIPAA for MSPs, and joining me is Donna Grindle of Cawdon. Good evening, Donna.
Good evening, dude. Oh, it's not even our Halloween episode yet.
But I know.
We're getting ready.
Getting ready for it. We're here before you know it. We're here before you know it. Yeah, there's a reason why they pick October to be Cybersecurity Awareness Month. Yeah. And so, you know, we've been talking about some scary things. We've got several more episodes of scary things lined up. Not because that's what we're trying to do. It's just because that's everything that's out there right now.
That's all we do all day is read this scary stuff.
No. Yeah. So today, though.
I wish that's all we had to do all day.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Okay.
But this is one of those self-assessment episodes.
Yes, you're right.
And the title of today's episode is 5 Signs Your Organization Is at Risk. Mm-hmm. So I like these types of articles, that right? When you see these come up in your news feed, you click on them because you want to look at all 5 of them and say, you know, mm-hmm. am I at risk or am I good? Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of a quick self-assessment. And then from there, you know whether or not you need to listen to the other 373 episodes. But before we get into today's episode, we do want to thank our donors. And also want to remind you about the Privacy and Security Bootcamp. The PriceSec Bootcamp has been moved to March 12, 13, 14, and 15 of 2023. So get that in your budget for next year.
Go ahead. Sign up now. Lock and load.
Yep. Yep. So we can't call the hotel and ask them any questions because we're scared that we'll have to move it to 2024.
Look, they have been very nice after that little miscommunication mistake.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. That's
yeah. Well, you know. It's nice sometimes to not have to make decisions, just have them made for you.
Yeah. Sometimes.
Yeah.
But you can find out more at PriceSecBootcamp.com. That's PriceSecBootcamp.com. And it's all there for you.
Yeah, go check it out.
All right. So that takes us to our HIPAA Say What segment of the week. So a patient sends us an email asking a question. And the question is, do we need to get authorization to reply to that question when a patient sends us an email asking a question?
Yes. Yeah, so there was a little bit of, you know, confusion around things because, you know, we had the policies in place. You know, the client's like, look, we have the policies in place that if they ask for us to email them their medical records, we need to confirm an authorization. So do we need to confirm an authorization for if they email us first? They've already emailed us first. Should we reply and go for it? Or should we get that authorization before we reply? Because they're asking me about a treatment question. Has nothing to do with medical records. So now, what do we do? And, you know, I could understand the confusion. And there is actually an older HHS.gov FAQ, FAQ, does HIPAA permit healthcare providers to use email to discuss with their patients? So technically, this has always been there. Okay, what's creating the issue is, never before would somebody say, oh, yeah, just send an unsecured email with the entire medical record. And so that's what got added on, but it is creating a little bit of a question here. So here's the answer. If the patient is initiating the conversation via email, the very first part of the conversation, I say you treat it the exact same way you would the other, because you don't have to get confirmation in writing that they understand that email is not secure.
Mm-hmm.
You can just simply say to them on the phone, and I actually say, make a script so that you know what was said. Write it down and make sure everybody just, I need to read this and get your confirmation.
Yeah, like you're a Miranda rights on the phone.
Yeah, kind of like that. Or
you have a right to secure email.
Say, I need to get your authorization. I'm going to send you an email to confirm we have the right email. Lots of value in that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. So I'm going to send you an email to confirm we have the right address, and you just need to reply to me that I do understand that this is not secure. Now, first of all, I would never be doing this. I had a provider send me an email about care, and I'm like, whoa, Bessie, Grandmama did not say you could email me about that. But if you do that, and you can do that either case, send an email that's got the script in it that says, you know, you've asked me to send this email address, reply to this to confirm the address, and that you understand that this is not considered secure email. Boom. They reply. Now you've got all you need to start answering them, and you just update their records. And I recommend you say, until you tell us otherwise, we'll assume that as long as you're emailing us and telling us to use your email, you understand. Mm-hmm. If you want to stop doing that, then you need to let us know. So then you've got it documented on the patient's account. You just confirm they've confirmed, and off you go. You're good to go. We don't want to make it hard for the patient to ask information and get the information. We don't want to impede the patient's ability if they don't care about security. And we now know most people, well, we have always known that most people do not.
Mm.
So there you go.
Yeah. They only care about the security that you implement to protect them, not that they should implement to protect themselves.
Well, even when something happens, they blame somebody else.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
You know, everybody's responsible for cybersecurity these days. Don't blame somebody else if you're not doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll be glad when that finally catches on. All right. That brings us to our 405D tip of the week. There is a spotlight webinar coming.
It may have already passed by the time this comes out. I don't know.
Yeah.
There is one, but here's the thing is we get access to the older ones. And I think we missed this one. We didn't have it, didn't know about it. I think it's already happened by the time this comes out, but that's okay. You can still go get the information. Send us an email or go to, where is it, David? Where do you go?
405d.hhs.gov.
Yo. So the 405D team does a spotlight webinar. There's regular webinars. This one is legal implications of a cyber attack. There are always really good information to be found in these webinars.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them I consider some of the best I've ever, you know, as far as the information goes, the best, you know, I didn't laugh as much as some of the others, but.
Well, you know, you're always looking for security awareness training. This is, you know, this is a prime chance to get a lot of that. You can take this, implement it into your security awareness training program. I would suggest you breaking it up. If this is an hour-long webinar, I'm sure they're going to throw out multiple points. So you can take that, break that up into a month-long, every single week, five-minute topic easily.
So, well, and this one is an important one. Because it's talking about the legal implications of a cyber attack, it's important for everyone to understand what that means.
Yeah.
So if you didn't catch it before, it was originally aired September 21st from 1 to 2. Make sure you sign up for the notifications because that's how you learn about them.
Mm-hmm.
We were slacking because we just assume everybody signed up, I guess. I don't know. But this was the latest one, and we do these webinars, and many more will be coming. So do not miss it.
All right, Donna. So tell us, what are the five signs?
Oh, you want me to start with that? I thought we were going to kind of lead up to that.
No, but we are going to lead up to that.
Okay. Well, you know, isn't that part of the deal? If you just go ahead and start with it, you don't have any kind of
we're going to build
anticipation.
Up. We're going to build it to the climactic ending.
Da, 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 da. So this is stuff, it came out a while, but we just cannot keep up. There's so much. Clearly, I mean, we just talked about how we couldn't keep up. Now we can't keep up. Anyway, this came out. We follow a lot of the Poneman studies. They do a solid methodology behind their studies. It's not something that you go, okay, this is tilted way too far. Mm-hmm. To marketing, right? So they do an annual study on a lot of things that help us see changes and trends and to make better recommendations to our clients. And one of the many that we follow is the cost of an insider threat, cost of an insider breach. And this is a global report. Occasionally, they have ones that specifically target, say, healthcare. We did review one they had done that was just about healthcare. But the fact that this is the broader global evaluation, that's the most important thing is to look at, because that's where you're going to see the trends.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you're going to see the things that all of the small entities always say, it's not going to happen to me. Well, yeah, we got a little something to tell you about that. for the insider study, they do a period of couple of months where they're doing all these interviews. And this one involved 278 different organizations, over 1,000 interviews with IT and IT security practitioners in the organizations, discussing over 6,800 insider incidents.
Mm.
So, you know, that doesn't take much math to see. There's more than one that happens at all those 278 instances. But if it's happening over there, you can count on it happening to you when it comes to this stuff. So, first of all, let's make sure we talk about what is, as far as this report goes, what do they look at as an insider threat? You know, they have broken it down to careless or negligent insider. And when we say insider, don't think we're just talking about employees. Contractors, vendors, those kind of things that have the ability to access your systems, that's an insider. If you have given them access, they are an insider. They are supposed to be inside your network, and something goes awry. So you got those where an incident, and then you got the malicious insiders. Those are ones everybody thinks nobody's going to, I can trust all my employees, or they think I can't trust any employee. Nobody's right in the middle. And then you've got the cases of credential theft, and that's a tough one because the attack is technically done by an outsider, but the credentials they use are an insider's.
Yep. Yeah, that's one of those cases where Johnny has access to all these records, and Johnny's logging in, and Johnny's accessing these records, but it ain't Johnny. And so how would you know that this is going on? And, you know, there are technologies out there to help you figure this out, but, you know, you mentioned earlier about people saying, well, it won't happen to me. My response to that is always, it's not a question of will it happen to you? The question is, will you even know it's happening to you?
That's a pretty fair statement right there. So when I'm looking at that and we're looking at the different types, you first look at it and you go, well, okay, the most prevalent of the three types are the careless or negligent insiders. 56% of all these incidents, of the 6,800 incidents, had to do with careless or negligent insiders. Wow. Okay, so people make mistakes, or they get in a hurry, or they think they don't have to pay attention. So you got both.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't care. I'm in a hurry. I'm not doing the extra steps. That's just a PETA. And if you don't know what a PETA is, spell it and work that out like an ID10T. So next came criminal insiders at 26%. So, you know, you first look at that and you go, okay, well, if those are the top two, first glance, that's where I should put my efforts.
Mm-hmm.
Not on the credential theft. You know, at least try to limit it occurring, or limit the blast radius if one does occur. But then you really start to think about it. And the credential theft that we mentioned, 18%. Well, that's not a huge amount until you add it to the careless or negligent. So what we're saying is that someone stealing the credentials, or someone that has them being careless or negligent, 74% of the time.
Yep.
And now you're dealing with things that everybody is doing, and you're not trying to nail an internal criminal,
mm-hmm.
which yep. so many people are. But that's only a quarter of the time that that happens. So based on that, you know, to me, I'm saying let's focus on preventing those two problems, the negligence, carelessness, and credential theft. How can we prevent that? And then the criminal, we just got to know that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing that it said was, we're not getting any better at finding it when it happens.
Nah.
Nah. Nah. That's key. We always know the sooner you find it, the less damage, right?
Mm-hmm.
So last year, it was 77 days to find it. Now it's 85 days. And only 12% were found and contained in 30 days or less.
Mm. Like I was saying, it's not a matter of when, it's a matter of will you know about it.
Will you even know? So, you know, you look at it, and that number, 85, it's pretty high. And then when you even think, take it a step further and think that there's still 34% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, almost three times the number of times that you find it in a reasonable amount of time, you find it greater than 90 days.
Yep.
So, huge. We're not finding them. And we know that it's insiders. So keep that in mind when mm-hmm. you're finding out and deciding, particularly with incident response planning. Have we ever mentioned that on this podcast?
I don't know that we've ever talked about incident response planning.
we just got to keep working on that, don't we? So... Yeah. When they look at an insider incident, regardless of what the root cause is, how much does it cost me? That's what everybody wants to know. That's a big chunk of your blast radius, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the most expensive costs, top two, the impact of business disruption due to diminished employee productivity. And we're not talking about just the one that was careless or negligent. We're talking about everybody.
Yeah.
23% of your total cost, so a quarter of every dollar you spend, will be because you can't have people working. And as a business owner, I know you're able to see it, like when you back in the day when we all had an office. if the power was out, the internet was down, and you look around, all you're seeing is people you're paying not to work.
Mm-hmm. All I hear is ching, 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 ching. like the old gas pumps.
Oh, yeah. Just going. And then the next one at 21%. So between these two, you're looking at, 44% of your costs. So roughly 50% of your costs, roughly, is the technology, which your you're going to need to give me that word, David.
Amortization.
Yes. value and licensing for the software and hardware that you deploy in response to the incident.
Yeah. So in other words, you having to buy stuff you didn't have.
Right. Because you didn't want to buy it then. You didn't get to spread the cost out. You had to slam it down, stroke that check right now, didn't get to plan for it.
Yeah. It reminds me of a friend of mine. He recently called me from the hospital.
Uh-huh.
Telling me about all of his brush with death, basically. And I was like, what happened, dude? And he's like, I didn't want to buy the blood pressure medicine I needed, and I didn't want to take it. And so now I'm in the hospital, and I've got this massive hospital bill that I'm now going to get because I didn't want to pay for the prevention.
Oh, jeez.
I was like, dude, that is stupid. As your friend, let me tell you, you're stupid.
That's a lot of layers of stupid, too. I mean, there's several things that you made a poor choice on.
I know.
But, especially when blood pressure medicine is so cheap. That stuff's not expensive. If you can get some that work that's not expensive. Mm-hmm. Like, I get 90 days for less than $10, and my insurance sucks. So you're right. It is the back to the failing to plan, planning to fail, that kind of thing.
Yep.
Who was that? Ben Franklin? We'll call it that.
Yeah, we'll say that.
Yeah. The same guy that said beer is proof that God loves you. All right. So all of that, that's bad enough. And then when they start throwing dollar amounts at it, then it just gets overwhelming for people mm-hmm. like us. I mean, when they say that the cost to the organization, $22.68 million.
Yeah, that's when you and I are going, I haven't even made that amount of money.
So, in my whole life.
So how is it costing me them?
Yeah, it's not going to cost me. But that's they at least give us this number where they say, that's organizations with more than 75,000 employees. The head count, right?
Yep.
So we just go, la, 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 la.
Mm-hmm.
We will continue to pick flowers and skip along the path. That's not in our wheelhouse. But the other number does give us a little bit more pause because they did break it down. They went with less than 500 employees.
Okay.
So, you could keep cutting this down and cut that in half and say 250 or cut it in a fifth. Pick one way that you want to take this number and narrow it down to your world. 8.13 million.
Still more money than I got in my checking account.
I know. Cha-ching. But again, this is, hard cost and soft cost. Disruption, those kind of things as much as anything else.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, for $8, it's still the same thing. So it just goes back to whenever it happens, hearing that ching.
Mm-hmm.
So from the time you hear it, start thinking $8 a minute. It's still a lot.
Yeah.
So bottom line is just know it's going to cost you more money than you even want to think about.
Yeah. And if you think your insurance is going to save you,
nah.
you got another thing coming. It might help you, but the other problem is there's a high likelihood that the insurance that could help you is probably looking at you saying, you were supposed to do these things so that this didn't happen.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't that many episodes ago that we went through that. And yeah. What was it? Did you see recently Lloyd's of London said, you know, we're not going to cover nation state attacks.
Yeah. Yeah, we talked about that. And, you know, we don't know who's going to determine that. And that's the scarier part.
Well, yeah, we just talked about the cyber war and how much of it is, you know, the nation states like North Korea attacking so they can make money. Right? They want the money. They want the intelligence. You know, people just don't understand that. Maybe I can't get national secrets from you, but I can get some moolah to help me get the national secrets. You know? Cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. But here's another thing. Email is a necessary evil. We know it. We've had episodes about it, too. We talk about it all the time on the show. Everybody tries to find the email killer. I'm not going to worry about that till I actually see something making headway.
Well, the bigger issues with email is that I don't think it is used the way it was ever intended. Like nowadays, it's not just I use it for email. You use it for perpetual storage as well. I mean, trust me, I do the same thing. I can find an email you sent me 5 years ago because it's still sitting in my email.
Oh, I can go back further than that. It's in my archive at least.
Yeah, right. But it's, you know, you use that stuff that way. And you've got, for example, I had an organization contacted me about a year ago. They had a breach to their 365 account because somebody gave out their credentials. And so I asked them, I said, do you know if you have PHI or PII in your accounts? And they were like,
blink, blink.
Yeah. Which, you know, my default response is there's an extreme likelihood you do.
If you don't know it,
yeah,
then it likely is the case.
But you know, there's tools that can go in and look for things like that. But, you know, typically by default, yeah, you're going to have stuff like that in there. It sits in there. You don't get rid of it. And people have this misconception that, oh, I've got encrypted email or my email is secure. Well, that's not going to do you any good if somebody has your credentials and they're logging in as you. If you can see it, they can see it.
Yep. And that whole assumption that everything's okay.
Yeah.
Goodbye. It's gone.
I love the ones that call me and go, you know, I just out of nowhere the other day, I got an email that says something about resetting my password. I don't know where that came from. I just ignored it. I'm like, what do you mean you just ignored it? Somebody had to kick off a password reset. It means they're probably sitting in your email account waiting on that email to come in so they could reset your password to something. Well, wouldn't they lock me out of my email account? No, because that would key you in to them being in there.
When they're ready, they will.
Yeah. Oh, you'll know it when they're in there because you won't be anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the email thing is something else. And my experience is that people don't understand it to the degree that they also don't understand why they need to protect it. When I go to business owners and I start having conversations about putting tougher security on their email and doing these things to prevent the problems that come through email, most of the time they look at me and go, why would I need any of that? I got all this protection on my computers and on my network and on my server. Why do I need to protect my email like that? Just go, you know,
Well, these two stats that came out of the interview responses explain that. So you can just use this, David.
Okay. How can I use it?
You now have the answer. Most sensitive data is in an employee's email account.
That's what I said.
65% of respondents say email is where employees store their most sensitive data, such as PII and intellectual property, as well as other critical business information. 65%.
Yeah. Store it there.
Keep it there. I don't think there's anything like that. Even as old as my, you might be able to find some really old something, but I don't think so.
Yeah. I mean, when I get emails like that, I try to take, you know, the attachment or whatever, and I move it to, you know, OneDrive or Google Drive or something other than encrypted folder or whatever. Mm-hmm. But then I delete the email. Like, I don't want it sitting in my inbox that has that data in it.
And you delete it out of trash.
Yeah. Yeah. But not only that, but if you got, you've got services that are, that's copying, backing up your email, where's that going?
Yep. You know, there's so many layers of questions that people don't even think about.
Yeah.
So you've got what's in there. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the malicious insiders use email to steal data.
Mm-hmm.
74% of respondents say malicious insiders emailed sensitive data to outside parties, followed by scanning for open ports and vulnerabilities. 62% said, and accessing sensitive data not associated with their job, 60% of the respondents said.
Yeah, like if I can get into a CEO's email account, first thing I'm doing is emailing the CFO, and I'm saying, we need to change where we send our payroll checks. Here's the new banking information. Please change it immediately.
Yeah, years ago we were doing, when we first, new clients go to do a on-site visit. That's a pretty big group, big organization, multiple locations. Our guy goes in and finds where all the, you know, C-suite offices are. I've been able to do this too. Go into a place, find every doctor's office and administrator's office all in a row, right?
Mm-hmm.
Walked up and down, went into every one of them. And in that particular case, he was able to take a picture of the email on the CEO's desk. Like, you know, made sure he didn't get like anything important, but took a picture showing I could have done a lot of stuff and no one ever saw him. No one ever talked to him the whole time he was in that area. You know, and amazingly, like by the end of the day, they had a new policy about locking doors on either end of that hallway.
Yeah, the days of the open door policy are over.
You got to get a pass. You got to get a pass. So that whole report, and we have links to it. It was funded by Proofpoint, but they Poneman says, "Look, I will do it the way I see fit." I've seen him speak about how he does these things, and I can tell you that picture they always show of him on all of the promotional stuff was made a long time ago. But they always say, look, you're not going to tell me how to skew this report. You can tell me what you want to find out, and I will give you the answers.
Mm-hmm.
So the report is loaded with a lot of other stuff. You know, I'm going to encourage you, if you... this information is something you can use. There's a ton of data in there. And sometimes when you read these, you have no idea that you could use things. This is one of the tidbits that I picked because it so often matters and we hear it so many times. What is the number one business driver behind the Insider Threat Management Program? For those people who are now remember, all of these folks had incidents, a lot of them. Number one driver, a past incident at somebody you know, your peer organization, or your organization. Mm-hmm. So when it happens to someone I know or to me, I will do all the things that people have been telling me I should be doing.
Yeah. So in other words, you got to be somewhere close to the blast radius before you believe that things will actually blow up.
Yes, it's unfortunate, but it's just there's so much competition for resources today. It's the world that we all live in, but unfortunately, these losses can be catastrophic to smaller businesses.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen it too many times. So, but that brings us now to the five signs that your organization is at risk for dealing with these problems.
Okay. You want to go forward or backwards?
your call there. I don't think that they're in priority order.
Yeah, I don't think they
no
are.
No particular order.
All right. So the first sign that your organization is at risk is that your employees are not trained to fully understand and apply laws, mandates, or regulatory requirements related to their work. And that affects the organization's security. So lack of training. Not that we don't harp on training, but we're harping on training.
Well, and so many people, you know, think that, okay, well, I got my HIPAA training. Let me tell you, you can't say anything. And, you know, like the knock, knock joke, HIPAA can't tell you. And I'm like, you know, that really isn't helpful along the lines. That's kind of like the hippo and the tutu training, the hippopotamus training.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Murphy the hippopotamus, whole different ballgame. People are like, seriously? Okay, yeah. I am saying seriously because I don't want you to say pee-pee in HIPAA.
Yeah, yeah. There is a pee-pee in HIPAA, but it's not the one we're talking about. We found that somewhere one day. There is a HIPPA.
That was never passed. It was never passed, never implemented, but there is one. During all of the discussion and disagreement about what HIPAA covers.
Yep. All right. So number two, your employees are unaware of the steps that they should be taking at all times to ensure that devices they use, both company issued and BYOD, you know, bring your own device, make sure they are secured at all times. So what should they do all the time to make sure they're secured all the time? They don't know.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. That goes back to training.
Oh. Yeah, I think it does.
All righty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's fascinating.
Number three, employees are sending highly confidential data to an unsecured location in the cloud, exposing the organization to risk. Sounds like shadow IT.
Uh-huh.
Like, wait a minute. I've got a free Google account. I can store that on my Google Drive and then go home and work on it.
Yeah,
yes,
and
I've seen that happen.
Yeah, many times. You know, whether it's the free Google account or the free Dropbox account or any of these others, so many times I'm not emailing it. You told me not to email it.
Yep.
So I'm getting past the first one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not saving it to a device. I'm getting past the second one. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to still do this thing by putting it in a free cloud account.
Yeah. Yeah, we've got a new email security program that actually looks at that. Like if you've got anybody in your organization that's getting email from cloud providers, it flags that. Like, why are you getting email from Dropbox? We don't use Dropbox. You shouldn't be getting emails from Dropbox. And it gives you a heads up because, you know, if you sign up to these things, you'll get emails from them, whether it's it could be an email for a 2FA code. It could be an email, you know, telling you about a sale going on or whatever, but you'll get some kind of email from these folks. And so it's just a way that organizations can see, hey, wait a minute, we might have a problem here that we don't know about. And people are putting things in cloud provider services that we didn't authorize.
See, and that's where we're going. More proactive
analysis,
behavior analysis,
which is,
you know, a big thing. But it's super expensive to get that full AI behavior analysis. But the smaller groups, tools like what you're looking at, it's a gold mine to catch what people are actually doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Just another way to make them think you're reading their emails. Yeah, I got all day to sit around and read hundreds of thousands of emails. No.
Yeah. I ain't got time to read my own.
No, right? I don't even see all of mine. I'm not looking at yours.
Yeah. So that was number three, which it, you know, it also has to do with training because mm-hmm. they don't know. All right. Number four, employees break your organizational security policies to simplify tasks.
Man. Boom.
I mean, so, okay, for all you IT folks out there, listen, when somebody says, how do you do XYZ? If your response is, you can't do that, then be careful because mm-hmm. you may have just set yourself up for somebody saying, I'm going to figure out a way to work around that.
Absolutely. So
look at them and say, what is it that you're trying to accomplish? Maybe I can, you know, figure out a way to help you accomplish that task, but not the way they want to do it, but the way you or the company has structured that to happen. You might find that they need some new platform to do that with, but if you just say, no, you can't do that and walk off, they'll find a way to do it.
Yeah, you can no longer be the department of no. Right? You can't yep. do that. And mm-hmm. I mean, I sat through a meeting of, you know, the IT department, different clinical departments, management. I mean, you know, I'm in this meeting discussing how, you know, how is data moving around? We're doing an analysis. It's a brand new client. And the topic of text messaging each other with patient information came up.
Mm-hmm.
And the clinical staff's like, we do it all the time. And IT gets livid and says, I keep telling them not to do it. They're not supposed to do it, blah, 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 blah. Okay, well, what alternative are you giving them? I told them not to do it. I told them to use something, something, something. And they go, well, we can't get to that on our phones all the time. We can't, you know, they give you all the reasons you can't use that tool.
Mm-hmm.
Well, are you listening to them? Well, then you, I don't care. You still shouldn't. No. Now, I finally interrupted the IT head and said, you need to accept that until you give them something better, they're going to do this. And if you yep. don't want them to do this, you need to give them something better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had a case one time where somebody was using the something better. And, you know, the good thing was, I'm like, if this is working great for you, then let's purchase the right one.
Yeah.
Let's just don't use the free version. Just purchase the one that, you know, gives us the coverage that we need.
Yeah. Why not?
Yeah. I recall a conversation one time where this lady was talking about working from home. And I said, well, you can't work from home on this patient information stuff. Are you coming into the office this weekend to do that? And she goes, no, I'm going to do it from home like I always do. I'm like, well, you can't do that from home. She goes, I've never had a problem doing it from home.
But we don't have any established way.
I'm like, you're not following me. You're not supposed to be doing it. I know you can do it, but you're not supposed to be doing it.
Exactly. You know, and that gets back to all of the, let me set up my computer at work. So I'm not doing it at home.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not taking it. It's not leaving. I'm going to connect to my company. And that, again, is shadow IT. And yep. if they're doing it, then you have to solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
They will simplify things because they're trying to do their job.
Yeah. Or maybe one of the worst ones I ever heard was a lady said, when I said something like, don't do that at home because, you know, you need to go through a secure platform, blah, blah, blah. And she goes, well, don't worry. I didn't have time to do it this weekend anyway. I finally just brought all the files back to work that I took home. They stayed in the car all weekend anyway. No harm, no foul. You had boxes of PHI in your car all weekend?
Paper yeah, matters too, people. Paper.
Yeah. There's no problem with that. You're good. Oh, my gosh. All right. Number five, folks. Employees expose your organization to risk if they do not keep devices and services patched and upgraded to the latest version at all times. Patch management.
Yep.
And that's hard. It's a simple word, and IT folks throw it around all the time. We sell patch management. But very seldom are they patching everything that you're using.
No, I mean, if they're not monitoring every single device that has access somehow, and mm-hmm. that's the BYO, D devices, the medical devices, all of these things have to be dealt with. And I can assure you that ain't happening.
Yep. And then when you have software that's, I'm sorry, you can't upgrade to version 20. You got to stay on version 12 because anything above 12 breaks it.
Oh, yeah. that is torturous.
So there's,
yeah.
There's a lot of issues with this one thing. And this is where you don't want to take number 5 and run around and start just patching everything.
No, you might cause yourself.
Yeah, you might cause yourself a lot of headache, but you definitely want to get your IT people involved to say, you know, what are we doing as far as patch management of everything? What is and is not involved in patch management? You might be shocked to find out what is not. And that's not a slight against MSPs. I mean, we do the same thing in my MSP. I do not upgrade and patch everything in every client environment. I can't, but they need to understand what I am doing and what I'm not doing. And they can figure out how they want to handle the rest of it, or I can help them figure it out or whatever. But I'm doing them a disservice if I come in and go, don't worry about it, we've got patch management. No.
You need to be clear.
Yep.
Who's patching what?
Sound like a good
back
song.
To who's zooming who.
Who's patching what? All right, folks, that's our show for today. If you enjoyed today's show, please share it out. Get us some more people up in here to listen to us.
Yeah. Do some reviews, subscribe, share it out. All that stuff matters.
Yep.
It's how people find us.
Sure enough. We'll just consider it your payment for a job well done. All right, folks, for Donna and myself, remember, HIPAA is not about compliance. It's about patient care.
You've been listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, hosted by Donna Grendel and David Sims, the show created to help you with HIPAA. For more information or to ask us a question, visit our website at helpmewithhipaa.com. Neither Donna Grendel or David Sims are attorneys, and they do not offer binding legal advice concerning regulatory compliance. The information in this podcast should not be relied upon or construed as legal advice in any way. Consult your attorney for legal advice concerning compliance with HIPAA regulations.